This morning, I want to start out with a picture I'm going to show you up here of a common occurrence in the summer, at least among pastors. It's a wedding, and I want you to determine what is wrong with this picture, okay? I think you can handle it at a wedding. What is wrong with this picture? Is there anything wrong with this picture? Is there anything shocking about this picture? And there's like two things, a tornado on the right and a tornado on the left. The photographer should tell them, like, a storm is coming. This couple also so enthralled with their kiss, they don't see what's behind them. It's a bad sign, isn't it, at a wedding? Maybe not. Maybe you can interpret this as, you know, the storm is behind us, sunny days are ahead. However you want to interpret this, that's fine. But normally, we do not plan or welcome storms at weddings. I mean, we just don't. You didn't plan on that at your wedding. You don't welcome it at your wedding. If storms and weddings come together, it's not because you intended that or planned that. That's a given. But let's push this a step further this morning. What if you did welcome and plan not a physical storm, but a stormy relationship? You purposely welcomed and planned a stormy relationship. How shocking is that if you entered into a marriage knowing, planning, choosing that relationship to be like a tornado ravaging that marriage? Those of you who are married now, do you remember when you first set your eyes on that one you're married to right now? She was a princess, and he was knight in shining armor. Now you're thinking ogre and, you know, Shrek and Fiona. But you didn't go in thinking Shrek and Fiona. Those of you who are single right now and you're entertaining thoughts of marriage, maybe not. But if you are, let me see if I can nail it in terms of who you're planning to marry. You're dreaming of a spouse who will be unfaithful to you, right? Is that what you're dreaming of? No. You're dreaming of a spouse who will have children by other people. Of course you're not. If your own father and mother told you to go down to the red light district and find a spouse there, the red light district, go marry a prostitute, go marry a pimp, you turn your mother and father in for child abuse right then and there. I know you would. It's shocking. But is it so shocking to our senses that we can't ever imagine it? Because if it is, we do not know our God. Let's unpack that for just a moment. Please turn to Hosea chapter 1, page 640 in the front section of the Bible in the chair in front of you, Hosea chapter 1. Our annual theme is loving our neighbors. We've tackled that from all kinds of perspectives. And today, we start a new 5-week series on a love only God can inspire from the book of Hosea. Now, as I read Hosea, we're coming into the middle of God's plan, a redemptive plan. So we're not starting in Genesis. We're not starting in Revelation. We're not starting with even Jesus Christ. We're starting somewhere in the middle, and I have to give you some background information to get you up to speed. I'm going to give you the top 10 factual things that you need to know in order to understand Hosea in a more in-depth way. So number one, the first thing is this. If you need to go more in-depth, go to faithlafayette.org/Hosea, okay? I put some Bible studies there for you. We're actually doing Bible studies in our faith groups on the west side. Going through this in our small groups there. So there's about a series of 6 written Bible studies right now that you can peruse, study at your own pace as you listen to this 5-week sermon done by a series of pastors here over the next several weeks, 5 weeks to be precise. Number two, in 1440 BC, long time ago, everyone say long time ago, long time ago. Faith West, say long time ago. I hear you. All right. No, I don't. But in 1440 BC, God entered a covenant with his people, Israel. He committed to be their God, and they were to be his people, kind of like a marriage, husband and wife, although marriage is not used right here in the imagery. He gave them a contract, the Ten Commandments. The first one was, have no other gods before me. I am your sole husband, so to speak. No other gods. I am the one and only true God, and I want to be your God. Number three, About 500 years later, 930 BC, God's people wrongly split into two nations, a southern nation called Judah, a northern nation called Israel, or in Hosea, you'll see the term Ephraim quite a bit. That's number three, a divided kingdom. Number four, the first king of that northern part of that kingdom was a guy named Jeroboam, who instituted a different way of coming to God than God wanted, the different way that God had ordained back at 1400 BC with the Mosaic Covenant, the Ten Commandments. He made a different way. Say, that's a bad thing. Everyone say, that's a bad thing. There's only one way. There's only one way. Let me read to you what he did. 1 Kings 12, then Jeroboam built Shechem in the hill country of Ephraim, and he lived there. Jeroboam said in his heart, now the kingdom will return to the house of David in the south. And if the people go up to offer sacrifices there in Jerusalem, then the heart of the people will turn back south, and they'll probably kill me. That's a bad thing. He's having a bad day. So the king consulted and made two golden calves, and he said to the people of the north, is it too much for you to go up to Jerusalem? You come and just stay around the northern parts, O Israel. These are your gods. The golden calves are your gods. He set one in Bethel, which is the southern edge of the northern kingdom, and then he set one at Dan to mark off his territory and his rival way toward God's way. Fascinatingly enough, just recently I went to Israel. That is not King Jeroboam there. That is my son, who's standing at the northern part, Dan. And that is the framework of the altar, assimilation of the framework of the altar that was actually right there. What would happen is they would offer illegitimate sacrifices on that supposed altar there, then go up those steps to the high places on the right. That's where the golden calf was. Now notice also in the Old Testament, you hear these words going over and over. My people prostituted themselves under every green tree. What do you see right there in the middle of that high place? A green tree. Okay, so that is the actual place of what I just read. Number five, in his blatant disobedience to God's covenant, starting with the first commandment, have no other gods before me, King Jeroboam set his people's foot on a path toward destruction. Once you choose a different way other than God's, there is no other way. It will lead to a certain destination. Okay, you choose a different way, guess what? You get the end of that way, and there is no life apart from God. They chose a different way, and he set his kingdom on a path toward destruction. And God continually tried to help them over the next 200 years. Idolatry or spiritual adultery. You say, Brent, I don't know that I don't bow down to golden calves. I don't rip off my jewelry and melt them down and make a little calf that I bow down to over my fireplace. You know, I just don't do that. You understand? You understand what the fire, not the fireplace, what the calf represented. They were going after material prosperity, and all of their false gods represented some kind of material prosperity and fertility in the land. They were worshiping the things of this world and wanted them rather than wanting God. All of us, the fundamental problem of the human heart is idolatry, whether you're bowing down physically to something else or not. Number seven, prophets. Prophets were God's covenant enforcer. They were the equalizers, the enforcers who called God's people, the king and the priest, back to the way. Everyone say, the way. The way. Thank you, back there. The prophets called the people back to God's way. Number eight, to us, many times the prophets just seem so bizarre. They do crazy things that I don't understand, like we're going to read today. And this is why I read the New Testament, and give me Paul to read rather than the Old Testament. I don't want anything to do with the Old Testament. But the prophets seem bizarre to us. And here's the reason why. Hosea even married a prostitute here. That was bizarre. But the reason for the bizarreness is that God used his prophets not to just proclaim the word, okay, but he used his prophets to embody the word. They were living parables. So when they're doing strange things, they're embodying the word of God so that the people see the message. Not only hear it, but see it with their eyes as well. And we're going to see that with Hosea. Number nine, After 200 years of idolatry, Hosea was God's final prophet.